Welcome to today's Gatton Technical Subcommittee meeting. Today's date is March 21st, 2023. The time now is 1:32 p.m. and I'd like to call this meeting to order. Sarah, if you could lead us through the roll call, please.
Yes, I'm Sarah Eichelberger with Gatton and I'll call the roll. Frank Ammons, Gatton.
Present.
Bo Kinsey, Travis County.
Present.
Anthony Breckenridge, City of Austin.
Present.
Chris Phillips, LCRA.
Present.
Dane Herbat, Travis County.
Present.
Carlos DeMatos, Gatton.
Present.
Gary Wiesman, Austin Community College.
Present.
Jaime Guerra, UT.
Present.
James Denman, LCRA. James? I'll skip over him, go to Justin Slocum, Austin ISD.
Present.
Harold Nall, UT.
Present.
Paul Hodge, Austin ISD.
Present.
Steve Pyle, State of Texas DIR.
Present.
And Gatton contractors we have joining us are Chris Gonzalez with BRICOM.
Present.
And Doug Wilson with JC Communications.
Present.
We've established a quorum.
All right, thank you. Agenda item number two, is there any citizen communication today?
No, sir.
Moving on. Agenda item number three, let's take 5 minutes to review the minutes from the previous meeting of February 21st in your packet.
This is James Dimon. I'm here. My mute wouldn't come off earlier. Sorry about that.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Gary. Motion to approve the minutes as submitted.
This is Dane. Second.
All right, we have a motion by Gary and a second by Dane. Is there any further discussion regarding the minutes?
Ben, let's have a vote. Anthony Breckenridge.
Aye.
Gary Wiesman.
Aye.
Steve Pyle.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
Justin Slocum.
Aye.
And Chris Phillips.
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
Thank you. Agenda item number four is our maintenance contractors report. Chris, please take it away.
All right, it's Chris Gonzalez. Since our last meeting, we've completed inspections of B1N and B1S with 15 corrected deficiencies between the two rings. Nothing out of the ordinary to report there. Please let me know if you have any questions. All right, hearing none, I'm going to move on to the inventory. As of the inventory, we didn't have any changes as inventory since last month.
Okay. Short and easy. Does anyone have any questions for Chris? All right, let's move on then to agenda item number 5, which is our network manager's report.
This is Carlos. On the project status sheet, the first sheet here says that we're doing splicing for segment 11, and that is not correct. I'm going to apologize for that. That's a typo on my end. The emergency notice did go out correctly. This is supposed to be segment 7 that it's scheduled for splicing today and testing on Wednesday and Thursday. That's under GATN active projects. Under GATN completed projects, we have a D1 North damage at Hartgrove Street. We will be looking at that under the network status report as well. This was a gunshot to the cable. Pictures were sent out with the GATN alert. The only tubes that were damaged in this were AISDs and DIR. DIR has no traffic on D1 North, so they did not report anything. Obviously, AISD does have traffic, so they reported it. We used Slack to assess a splice. They were only we only spliced the damaged tubes. We're making an assessment on whether or not this would require a full-blown repair of the segment, and we'll come back to you with that information. Also, under entity-specific active projects, we have the C2 South Mansfield Dam Park, Travis County. That'll be scheduled here shortly. So, and that's it. Any questions on the project status report?
And Carlos, on that gunshot, which was a really neat picture, mm-hmm. I felt like I've seen GATN cable damage by gunfire before, but it was like buckshot. Was this the first time a bullet actually pierced the cable?
No, sir. It's been several times that an actual bullet has traversed the cable. In fact, we have actually caught the bullet once. Oh, wow. It went through the cable, but it hit the strand and it got stuck there. Usually we even find the casings on the ground in the area. People don't stop to look around for that.
Sure.
But there's nothing. But buckshot is one of the most normal ones and most difficult ones, because buckshot, when it hits the cable, it sort of embeds itself in it, and it usually doesn't come out. So it's not like it doesn't have that, the effect that you can see it from the ground almost. So
Easy to find.
Yep. Not as easy to find. So that requires a hand over hand going over the cable to look at that. So anyway.
Yeah, buckshot. This Frank, buckshot typically correlates with dove season, and the bullets typically correlate with a nightclub on Montopolis every New Year's.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's see. Any questions for Carlos on the project status report? Then let's move on to 5B, the network status report.
Well, we sort of went over the item that we're discussing here, which it happened on the 13, which is the gunfire. That's the top item on the
lost some audio for Carlos. Did you, anyone else?
I'm sorry.
You broke up a little bit there. I can hear you now.
Oh, it's just that we went over this one on the project status sheet. Right. It's just that D1 North AISD, the cable that was damaged for D1 due to gunfire. So.
Got it. Okay. All right. Any questions on the network status report? If not, let's move into 5C, splice case analysis of chips versus heat shrinks.
Yeah, so this is Frank. And on 118 this year, we had a City of Austin D1N emergency repair, which, you know, affected only the City of Austin. And while we were trying to figure out what caused this damage, it was discovered that it was due to a brittle fiber and chip and silicone splicing that had taken place previously on the network. Once upon a time, that's or the way all splicing was completed by our vendors on behalf of Gatton in the field. So along the years, we changed the technical guidelines to use heat shrink. So the question, two questions came up. One of them was, you know, can we take a look at this, how old the fiber is out there that we have? Because this particular fiber in this case was dated 2003, which, you know, tells you how old that is, 20 years old. Even though it was armored, it was 2023. So when we did the armor replacement, naturally we didn't replace it. And at that time it was probably around 15 years old. So, estimated to be around 15 years old when we did this armor replacement. So, what we did was, if you'll see on your handouts, and let me get to that here real quick. We still are in the process of going through each ring and, identifying how the fiber ages and at the same time, simultaneously, that's going to take a little while longer, and we are going to come back to you with it. It's just taking a little more work for that, because as you imagine, each segment's, you know, there's a lot more segments than there are splice cases, out there in the field, if that makes any sense. But, so we're going through each segment, in each direction from each splice case to get the dates of the fiber, and going to put analysis together for that. And then if for this handout, what you're going to see is the analysis for the case of spliced heat shrinks versus chip silicone way of doing it. So I'll let you spend a little time with this. We got the total amount of cases and the cases with silicone. So the percentages that aren't cases with silicone are going to be your heat shrink. And then the pie chart below the total amounts. With the percentages, the pie chart below gives you, on this page, gives you a good estimate of how much it is.
So Frank, the pie chart, I think, is off. It should be 259 in orange and then 559 minus 259 in the blue, if that makes sense. Essentially, what you're showing is not 46%.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is are there totally 559 cases or 559 cases that have heat shrinks?
Yeah, we've got that backwards. We've got the right.
You're,
so
you're correct on that one, but that's something that yes, I guess I could have done. Yes, you're right. I could have put the 300 there, being the leftover of the cases. It's just, I apologize for that.
No worries. Let's just pay attention to the numbers up above then for now.
Yes, sir. As you can see, the column, the ring column is the ring column. Total cases, the total cases on that ring. And then cases with silicone are the ones that I found that has silicone on that ring, and the percentages are on the right.
Do these percentages more or less align with the rings that have completed non-armored replacement? So
yes.
I think A1 North has a lot of non-armored replacement, and so it has very little. And by looking at this, I would think D1 North has a lot of non-armored cable, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
It does have, it was done. It has very, it doesn't have that much armor cable. We haven't done a lot of work in D1 North for many years. So there was still chips and silicones at the time. It's still 80% of it. It's, that has, you know, silicone on it. So,
I mean, is it the case that anytime we do work in a splice case with the chips and silicone that we're replacing it to heat shrink?
It that really depends. Because it depends on the impact on what we are doing to the network at the time. If we're replacing cable, yes, everything that gets spliced gets new, you know, new heat shrinks.
Right.
However, if there's something already spliced that was not supposed to go down, that it's working, we don't replace it at that time.
Got it.
Let's say so there's, there's a node cable there that we're replacing a piece of cable, but that node cable, it's attached to something else that stays with silicone.
Got it. So I don't know if Gatton should consider being a little more proactive in seeking out and upgrading these splices, even though that'll be costly and timely and disruptive.
You know, I think it's just you know, we have the one-offs where they're brittle. I think let's get our fiber, all of our dates, you know, for how far past we are, the manufacturer's warranty, number one, for the fiber out there in the field. It's going to be a lot of information. And, you know, in talking to Carlos earlier about it, it's, you know, or previously about it, it's how we track this information, you know, that we declassified as being 5 years or older, 10 years or older, 15 years or older, 20 years or older, 20 years being outside the manufacturer's warranty. So I think what him and I are going to do is just create a list of all the fiber segments, the manufacturer's date stamp, and then go from there once we have all that data collected. But to your question, I don't see it as a necessity to replace the chip and silicone unless we start seeing, like, this is a one-off. You know, we see this every now and then, and consider all the inclement weather that we've had and how successful the network has been in relation to that. I don't recommend going out and replacing chip and silicone, you know, as a project. I think we just keep noting it as we go through our splice case audits and note any fiber that would appear brittle. Just by opening and closing the cases, you can tell by how flexible it is or it isn't as far as, you know, it being brittle and for the most part. And I would just like to apologize. And I'm just going to tell you this. I know it's an open meeting. My son's a senior in high school. I was out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of last week. So you're noticing some errors on some of this documentation. I did come in Friday, log in and reviewed this documentation. I just didn't take the time I should have with it because I was actually scheduled off that day. So my apologies for that to everyone. That's not something you typically see happen, and you won't see it happen going forward. But Jaime, yeah, I don't think, unless any other tech members may think it's worth it, from a network manager standpoint, I don't think it's worth it unless we start seeing more. I mean, we certainly don't get caught off guard in the future with all of a sudden fiber start breaking. And that's the purpose of us tracking the, you know, from the January tech meeting, the recommendation, which was an excellent one, to get all the dates put together of how old the fiber, the age fiber report is what it's called, what I'm familiar with from other networks. So I think we get that and we go from there, make that decision then.
Hey, this is Dan. Question for Chris. Chris, are you all staying up to date, or are you keeping skills in-house to deal with silicone splices?
Yes, sir. We haven't. Honestly, since I've been here at Bracom, we've never used silicone. I think silicone was probably at least the last time it was used, probably 15 years ago. We do not use silicone here.
Right, right. So I guess my question is, if we have a problem in a case that's using silicone, do you have the expertise in-house to deal with it, or would it then be a full replacement of that splice case?
Oh, no. Our fiber techs are very skilled, and they're able to grab individual fibers and pull them out of the tray itself and repair them one at a time if needed. So usually the trays only have 12 fibers in each tray, and it's usually broken up per entity. So only that one entity would be impacted. It wouldn't be impacting everybody. But we have the capabilities of just fixing one fiber at a time.
That's a good question, Dane. So Dane, you correct me if I'm wrong, but so Chris, if it was one fiber at a time, you're not going back to chip silicone. You're actually heat shrinking it at that point in time, correct?
That is correct. Okay. We're able to clean it out and replace it with the heat shrink.
So, with that being said, if we have the ability to deal all the way down to individual fibers and still repair them, I'm not seeing an urgency to go back and replace all of these cases. I am looking at the Super Ring North, Super Ring South, and A2N and A1N. When those rings, those are all going to be replaced. It will take a chunk out of that, but there's still quite a few, especially on the C2S and D1N. I think it's a conversation that we can have after we get all of the non-192 replaced.
Chris, this is Steve. If you have a fiber that breaks in a splice case or a tray that has 12 fibers or six fibers, do you repair just the one, or do you repair all six of them or all 12 of them at the same time if you're doing silicone?
Well, it depends on what the entity, we get our directions from the entity. If it's entity specific repair, okay. If there's other active circuits on the other active fibers, we may leave them there. It's just, every situation is different.
Okay. Thanks.
Question.
Yeah. So overall, I think this is really good that we're looking at this data, and later on, should we see trends in the data that are actionable, then we'll take action. But for the time being, keeping this inventory of how much we believe the network has silicon chips compared to how old they are and whether they're armored, non-armored, if we start to see trends that make us concerned, then we can perhaps take action then. But for now, gathering data is good.
Great information.
Okay. Anything else to discuss on this topic, or do we need to see any other information? Well, I think, Frank, as you mentioned, you're going to be working on the aged fiber report. I think it'd be good to include, not only the age, but this data alongside with it to see what we suspect and that there's a correspondence with older fiber and having this older splicing.
Absolutely.
Okay. If there's nothing else on this topic, then let's move on in the agenda to item 5D, which is the job budget report.
Yeah, this is Sarah. I'll wait for the handout to get pulled up. Carlos, can you hit open document on there, please, so it will blow it up a little bigger? Thank you. So we are tracking 45 jobs totaling $3.4 million. Of those, 9 jobs, the ones shaded in green at the top, have been completed. Thus far for FY23, we have been invoiced $342,000 in MAC jobs. As I said, 9 jobs have been completed, so 36 jobs have been awarded but are still pending completion. And you can see at the bottom, I've got those 3 REB projects. Those have been on there as a placeholder since, I believe, November is when we first reviewed them, and they say pending. So those have been there. It's not a change, but I just wanted to point out that those are the 3 projects that we're re-reviewing today. Please let me know if you have any questions.
All right. I don't think I have any questions, and I don't necessarily want to rush the tech committee, but are we ready to move on, or do we want to look at the budget report a little longer?
I'm all right.
All right. Frank, Carlos, I believe item 6 is all executive session. I know the 6A is the other ones as well.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That being said, the time now is 1:57 p.m., and I'd like to adjourn for executive session under Texas Government Code 551.089 and 418.181. See you on the other call. The time is 2:07 p.m. and we are back in open session.
Okay. I'm Sarah Eichelberger and I'll call the updated roll call. Frank Ammons.
Present.
Bo Kinsey.
Present.
Anthony Breckenridge.
Present.
Chris Phillips.
Present.
Dane Herbat.
Present.
Carlos De Matos.
Present.
Gary Wiesman.
Present.
Jaime Guerra.
Present.
James Denman.
Present.
Justin Slocum.
Present.
Harold Knoll.
Present.
Paul Hodge.
Present.
And Steve Pyle.
Present.
We've reestablished a quorum.
Excellent, and thank you. Let's get back to agenda item number 6. I guess the question I have is, can we simply make a motion just by calling out the agenda numbers and sub number, you know, sub letters?
Yes, absolutely. Item? Yes, if you call out all of the agenda item alphanumerical.
Perfect. Entertain any motions we may have? All right, I'll get us started. This is Jaime. I'd like to make a motion that we approve, recommend for board approval, agenda items 6A, 6B, 6C, and 6D.
Moment, I 16. I second that amendment, that proposal.
All right, you got a motion by me, Jaime, and a second by Steve. Any further discussion?
Just what I when we get to the board meeting, and I know I always harp about money, but it just the and I might it should have brought it up during the job budget tracking report. I don't like that negative $95,000 in the project reserve after all encumbered paid. So this is pushing us over. I know that we have projects that are being reimbursed by developers. But we need to, I feel that we need to be able to, we need to find a better way of showing that because I just don't like that negative $95,000 because it's basically saying that we're overspending our budget.
Right. Understood. And that, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, that negative 95 would only be as if we complete all the projects we have going on this year, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's but, what that. Yeah.
But that doesn't matter because we're putting these on FY23. That's the budget we're in. Unless we're allocating these projects to FY24 monies, then
and
that's a different.
That's how it reads in the agenda, that they're funded by the FY24 MAC budget. And they were represented. They were represented in the forecast that I gave. I believe that was in February when we did the it may have been in March when we did the when we did the adjustment, but those were included when you had asked me to show how the TxDOT projects would allocate over the years. You know, those were included in that forecast.
Okay, I missed the FY20.
But yes, these three REB projects that you're recommending are slated for next fiscal year's budget. And I'll try to think of a better way to show that, Gary. I've just you know,
yeah,
it's
I know.
Kind
it's,
of a,
it's hard. It's just
an absolute bottom line.
Yeah, I understand. It's just
but
one
I
of
see
those.
Where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's also always a thin line, you know, in my opinion, at least, but at a tech committee level of showing budgetary items because we're going to do that at the board level, if that makes any sense. But I see where you're coming from, Gary, because you know you're going to be in a board meeting approving this here in a couple of weeks and. You want to know going into it, you know, how it impacts either this year's budget or next year's budget. So
yeah, I get and you. I should have read the items the rest of the way through. So I dropped off before I got to the FY24 there. Okay.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion before we go to a vote? All right. Hearing none, let's do a vote, Sarah, please.
Anthony Breckenridge.
Aye.
Gary Wiesman.
Aye.
Steve Pyle.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
Justin Slocum.
Aye.
And Chris Phillips.
Aye.
That's a unanimous approval.
Excellent. Thank you all. So we've already done agenda items 7 and 8. So the last agenda item is number 9. We're going to confirm the date, time, and location for the next technical subcommittee meeting is April 18th, 2023, 1:30 p.m. here at the City of Austin Permitting and Development Center or via Microsoft Teams video conference. The time now is 2:13 p.m. This meeting's adjourned. Thank you all for your time and participation. Have a great day.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Hey, good job, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.